What's up, guys? I'm Nobody Special, and I have a special guest with us today. Melody Wright is with us, and we are going to talk about the mortgage and the securitization markets once again, because lately all the attention has been on private credit and the gating of funds and software loans because AI, and people are missing a lot of other things that are going on, a lot of other frauds that have been exposed, in particular some things that are happening, have happened already, and some pretty head-scratching headlines over the last few weeks, all surrounding the mortgage market. So Melody, thank you so much for joining us. And how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Jack. And thank you for having me. It's my pleasure. And I say I'm doing great, but I was telling you before we started, I'm a little fired up about some of these things that I'm witnessing in this market. Just because there's a lot going on with private credit, but they have tentacles into mortgage and real estate and commercial real estate particularly. And we're starting to see just some really crazy things happening. I wanted to just kind of chat about some of the stuff that I've been seeing and writing about recently.
And that's a good segue, because you had a very excellent article that came out just 2 days ago in the M3 Melody Substack, which, by the way, guys, I will put a link down in the description to that below. I highly recommend Melody Substack. In this article, The Big Buy, and I read through this one this morning, and it just made me say, like, what the hell is going on at Fannie Mae?
Right.
And you touched on a lot of different things in this story, and I don't even really know where to begin. So let me just start by asking in general, Melody, what the hell is going on at Fannie Mae here?
I don't know. So let me just give a little bit of history for everybody. So the reason this is called The Big Buy is because I was actually responding to an article or two articles that Michael Burry had written about the government-sponsored enterprises, that's Fannie and Freddie, doing their IPO, which there's been a lot of, speculation that was going to happen. And I wanted to address some of the things he said, because I think he's missing some of the fraud we're seeing now. He did a great job of doing the history of the agencies and how they've been riddled with fraud since the beginning, really, and talked about the last cycle where he basically said, you know, they went gangbusters. If they had pulled back in 2005 and 2006, we wouldn't have had the contagion that we actually had. And I actually went further in this article saying, well, actually, they knew that. So Taylor Beenham Whitaker was a big non-bank originator, and they knew in 2000 that they were getting fraudulent loans from TBW, is what they're named. But it wasn't until after the crisis that they realized the scale of the fraud, which went to $3 billion, and they kind of stormed those offices at Taylor Beenham Whitaker. But had they stopped the fraud in 2000, they could have prevented a $3 billion fraud. And so I use that as like a kind of an analog to what I'm starting to see now in Fannie and Freddie. There's just crazy stories coming out. And these started actually some time ago in 2023 with a large scandal around Meridian Capital, which looks like they were doing fake documents. It was around a government, affordable home program. And they suspended the lender. Now, after the GFC, and this is where the history is important, I can't emphasize to everyone the stranglehold that all of mortgage was in, all of the GFCs, and just the contrition, like just how everybody, so a lot of people got wiped out of the market, but everybody that was left was very focused on creating very conservative policies and doing everything by the book. And so somewhere along the way, Jack, it is now clear to me that has gone by the wayside. And I think it probably started around 2021. As this boom was slowing down, we saw that they removed the debt to income threshold in the Dodd-Frank legislation. And that's when I think the wheels started coming off the bus. You get to 2023 and there's this fraud and they suspend Meridian Capital. But then they put Brian Brooks over there, who was a former OCC head of Office of I always forget the name of that.
Controller of the currency. Yeah.
Comptroller of the currency, yeah. So he was a big, heavy hitter, and they put him over there, and they've now reinstated Meridian, and I can't believe it, Jack. I mean, I am blown away, because that's not I was explaining to you, like, when you work with these agencies, you do anything wrong, you're immediately called on the carpet. It's like, and when you just want to be a partner with them, it's like a colonoscopy. And so this is a long, long answer. But the thing is, I'm seeing behavior that I don't understand, because if they were truly following, and sorry, this is taking so long, but quickly, one of the big things that came out of the last crisis is that nobody was doing proper third party oversight. Okay. And so the OCC actually came out with the best practice of what is proper third party oversight. And then the CFPB just kind of adopted, and I'm saying a million acronyms, but the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau adopted the OCC rules. And so I think that was why Brian Brooks went over there, because theoretically, like, they sort of hold the, you know, their people knew them as very, very dedicated or concerned with third party oversight. And so I can't believe that there is a scenario where these people would be let off the hook, and especially in such a short amount of time. So that was the first big fraud. It was a very weird time. Freddie delayed their earnings. So I think all of this was around the same time, as well as they were uncovering this multifamily fraud, Fannie Mae gets in trouble. There's an Office of Inspector General report, something around their provision for loan loss that they took for multifamily caught the eye of the OAIG, and the report's redacted. We don't know what happened, but it does say, you can tell it says, we didn't inform them that they did X and they could be subject to, you know, disciplinary action, but you need to be aware that that possibility is kind of what the parts that you can read in this redacted memo. And I don't know, it's so much of this stuff, Jack, it's like you have to be from with inside to understand what they're actually saying, because when you write a memo like that, those, like, we have no recommendations, but, you know, you probably need to talk to them about this. That is a way to cover your, you know what, while also covering your new, you know what, if that makes sense. Like, you're covering it on both sides. Like, you're pretending to do your job, but you're also kind of putting something out there to give you some plausible deniability. So that's a long answer to what you just asked, but it's like, I I'll get to a very specific recent fraud that really has me concerned, but I just want to stop there to see there's anything you want to pull on.
Okay. So yeah, there's a lot I want to pull on there. let me start with Dr. Burry and his commentary. So I didn't read Burry's article on this, but I know there's been a lot of talk around IPOing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, who are still in government conservatorship, right? So the unwind of the GFC, here we are, what, almost 20 years later, still hasn't fully been unwind. The government still has Fannie and Freddie on their books.
Yes.
Which is what they did after the GFC. So there's been a lot of talk about an IPO, basically taking these companies public again, getting them off the government books.
Right.
So Burry's article, I'm based on what you wrote in your Substack, I take it to that Burry is in favor of this. Is he almost bullish on these companies?
He's bullish. He's buying stock. Mm-hmm.
Which is unusual, right? Burry is not known for his bullish takes. So that's
right.
That's interesting. So what is Burry's bull thesis based on, that they've learned their lesson and they're doing better now? Is that?
So it's a weird, bizarre argument I can't quite understand, because he does not talk about what we call the implicit or explicit guarantee. And so the implicit and on a go forward basis, it just seems as if he just assumes that that implicit guarantee should stay in place, which, if everybody's wondering what that means, like, so FHA is fully backed by the United States government, full faith and credit of the United States government. Fannie Mae, it's a implicit guarantee, which we saw play out during the great financial crisis, that the government would come back and backstop whatever happened. And should I be clear, not the government, the taxpayer. So, you know, it's going to backstop. And so that is an implicit guarantee that's been around since they've been instituted. And he doesn't address that. And he makes a statement about government needs to effectively create the velocity in the housing market by releasing these into the capital markets. And I'm like, for a free market solution. And I was like, dude, this isn't a free market solution if you have the implicit guarantee of the government. But it wouldn't work if you didn't have that. The banks would eat them alive.
If I could pause you for a second, it sounds like Burry's bull thesis for the companies, if we can call it that, it's that this will somehow accelerate price discovery. Taking these companies public will unfreeze the housing market, for better or worse, is kind of what I'm hearing.
I see he thinks that there is some potential trouble in the housing market. I think what he's focused on, and this is where people who focus on numbers and models, he's focused on redistribution. And he doesn't actually address the price discovery. So there were a lot of things in this article that were missing, in my opinion, and a lot of math and models. That's great. I love math and models. But I felt like he was missing the context of why this is not. And he kind of focuses on, oh, our big problem is that old people aren't selling their homes. Well, that's one of our problems, but it's not all of our problems. Our bigger problem is that mom and pops, went crazy and speculating in Airbnb, long-term rental, and all of that. I don't think he's not seeing the fraud at Fannie and Freddie. He doesn't discuss that at all. And that's where I was like, there's a few ways I could have argued with what he was saying, because I very much respect the man. But I wanted to go at this kind of fraud angle, because he sets up the stage talking about kind of how these things go hand in hand, or did go hand in hand. He had a quote in it that said, the government really are the ones that kind of forced them into getting over their skis in 2005 and 2006 and turned away until it was too late. And so I don't think he realizes, because I think so many people that haven't been paying close attention to mortgage think that credit quality is something that it's just not. They believe the industry with all this credit quality gospel singing, but they don't understand the industry was using automated tools that relied on inflated credit scores. And just due to the sheer volume, there were so many mistakes, and then also fraud.
Okay. So I am seeing a lot of similarities then. You mentioned how the government kind of forced Fannie over their skis prior to the GFC.
Right.
Something you did an excellent job in some prior videos over the last couple of years documenting, like with the FHA loan workouts, how those have artificially inflated the credit quality of borrowers who, by any reasonable measure, should have been foreclosed on years ago. And yet they're still in these houses, not making these payments, something that is slowly being unwound here. You touched on Taylor Bean and Whitaker, the TBW, that the non-bank financial institution or non-depository financial institution or shadow bank or non-bank, whatever you want to call it.
Whatever you want to call it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, no shortage of that going on these days. And then also in your article, you talked about a more recent fraud, something that mm-hmm. went completely unnoticed and unreported. What was that one? And what do you think happened there?
I'm so confused by this, Jack. I mean, I am and I'm not. I'm just giving my tinfoil hat. But, essentially Walker & Dunlap, Fannie Mae's number one originator in commercial real estate in the multifamily space, and Freddie Mac's number four originator, apparently, looked in its books and found some fraud. They had this $100 million exposure to mortgage fraud. When you actually go to the 10K of Walker & Dunlap, you realize it's actually more. That was just part of the charge that they were taking, that there's actually, since 2024, Walker & Dunlap have had to repurchase over $220 million worth of loans or indemnify them due to fraud. Now, what I found, so Keith Larson of The Real Deal did an excellent story on this, but his was the only one I could find. And I find that interesting, because this is a non-depository financial institution, and isn't it all the rage right now to be talking about fraud in private credit and everywhere else? And the Wall Street Journal, and this is a key piece I don't think people understand, Jack, is that last year we kind of had a refi boom. A lot of liquidity went into the commercial real estate market. And a lot of that, I've read 20 to 25% of that credit was actually private credit. And so the delinquency went down last year because there were fewer people were able to find refinance, able to find liquidity to get out of certain tight spots, which as private credit is drying up, commercial is not going to have that. So you're going to start to see more and more delinquents. So anywho, back to Walker and Dunlop, this should have been a story in Bloomberg and Wall Street Journal, because at the same time, their stock has just, as you and I were talking about, is just tanked. But nary a word, The Real Deal, that's an industry publication. Most people don't even know it exists. It talks about real estate. And then AI Invest had a story where they talked about a $50 million of additional charge that is being negotiated. But you can't get the details, and the details aren't really in the 10Q or 10K specifically. And so I don't understand how Fannie Mae's number one originator being this exposed to fraud or finding something that significant, that there's not more action and there's not more, like they're not being put on a watch list or something like this. But it went completely hush hush. And funnily, in Walker and Dunlap's 10K, they don't mince words about the prevalence of the fraud. And I mean, it's a very strong statement. They say over the last 2 years, several high profile criminal proceedings and lawsuits have surfaced in the commercial real estate lending market, alleging borrower fraud around loan collateral, asset title, and borrower misrepresentation. And then they go on and so they're taking these charges, but it's not news apparently to Fannie Mae. Doesn't feel like they have to do anything about it. But important context, Jack, and I'm sorry I'm talking so much, but important context, Fannie Mae just came out earlier this year claiming that fraud had gone down last year. Well, what happened last year? A bunch of people got fired at Fannie Mae, including the chief ethics officer, the chief ethics and compliance officer, and the general counsel. If you work in these agencies, you know that the way that you have ethics complaint lines, you have the whistleblower complaints go up to the chief ethics officer and the general counsel. And so Keith Larson, again, he's the one that kind of said, well, you know, the majority of the fraud they found was through employee tips. Well, you take off, 100 of the right people, you're not going to get those employee tips anymore. And so, yeah, great article by Keith. And so it's like, okay. And they also fired the head of single family that I know very well, through, like, not personally, but professionally, Malloy Evans, who he's been around forever. And I don't know recently, but I always considered him a really good egg. But it's unlikely he'll be talking because he walked away with a settlement. And so all this is to say that I think the reason they did not want to talk about Walker and Dunlop is that right after they make this statement, we're hearing about, or right around the same time, this big fraud at their number one originator.
So they fired all the people who report and investigate fraud, and then they come out publicly and they say fraud is down.
Correct. That's right.
Okay. And coincidentally, down is up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this happened right around the time Meridian got reinstated at Fannie and Freddie too, didn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So did they fix the problem, or did they just turn off the instrumentation that measures the problem? I'll let you guys decide how you want to interpret that data. And the real deal, by the way, this isn't a paid promotion or anything. I just recently renewed my subscription to Real Deal because they are the only ones covering any of this stuff. And this is a, very specific, it's rather expensive website. But it's, if you're not a real estate investor or a commercial real estate investor, you have no business in this. But, we have these other media outlets with Bloomberg's, Forbes, Wall Street Journal, Financial Times that typically cover stories like the Walker and Dunlop fraud. And nothing about this story. They're saying $100 million in the headline here. As you pointed out, it was $220 million in loans. So, $100 million is the exposure. We've learned with First Brands and Tricolor, whatever they tell you their exposure is, it's usually at least 2.5 times what they're willing to advertise.
Right.
And, when you were talking about this in your Substack article, the Walker and Dunlop fraud, I couldn't help but think of Century Capital, which is probably a name, again, most people have never heard of, because a few weeks ago when the Market Financial Solutions bankruptcy happened and that blow up happened tied to mortgage fraud, this was, you know, a UK company that had fraud tied to some Bangladeshi mortgage scam. It was unreal what they were doing, but don't worry, rigorous underwriting standards were surely engaged in.
Yes, absolutely.
But buried in the Market Financial Solutions story was that this was the second mortgage lender in the UK to go bankrupt that month. A few weeks earlier, this Century Capital outfit had filed for administration, which is UK equivalent of bankruptcy. And that was about 100 million pounds, you know, almost the same size of the story. And as I was researching the Market Financial Solutions story, something that me and our friend Locks talked about on my channel about a month and a half ago, I couldn't find anything about Century Capital, just this footnote in the Market Financial Solutions story that, oh yeah, this other thing happened. And it looks like Walker and Dunlop is another case like that. And, you know, the point being, guys, that I often, you know, rip on the financial press for being cheerleaders for the financial services industry and bordering on sell side research. Where the hell are these guys?
Right.
I mean, $100 million might seem like a small number based in today's AI headline standards, but, you know, this is huge amounts of money going missing. And in the case of the Walker and Dunlop story, this was they suspect, they don't know specifically which loans, but Walker and Dunlop did loan similar amounts to this guy named Mordecai Weiss, who is a commercial real estate investor near my hometown in Lakewood, New Jersey. And his firm invested in several buildings in Houston, Texas, conspired with the title agent to create fake invoices to inflate the values of these buildings in order to secure loans. Him and his wife did it. I mean, like, rinse, repeat, this same commercial mortgage fraud playbook. And these stories are being exposed, resulting in real losses on Wall Street. I mean, while this story that nobody's heard about has been happening, look at the stock of Walker and Dunlop, down from $90 in September to $43 today. I mean, it's up a couple of cents today, but this thing has been cut in half. Right. And Melody, you mentioned this is the number one issuer for Fannie, the number four for Freddie, or right. I may have those crossed.
Yeah, originator. Yeah, no, you got it right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, originator. This is not a small player in the space, and it's just not getting any coverage. Right. I find that rather I should find that surprising, I think is what I meant to say. I don't find it surprising. I should find it surprising that it's not getting covered.
Yeah, I realized I used the word shock twice in my article, and I'm just like, you got to stop being shocked, Melody, because this is, but I got to tell you what this is, Jack, just to talk personally for just a second, is that it's very hard for someone who came through all this, who worked their you know what off, trying to make sure it never happened again. Watch the entire industry go that way, where you were, I mean, you did not make bad decisions. And I mean, everybody felt badly. And it was so rigorous. And then to just watch how all, I mean, like within a matter of years, that all just disappeared. And I think it's important what you just, we don't know for sure because we don't have the details, but I believe those Houston apartments were part of some stupid affordable housing program, which, you know, I just keep telling everybody, affordable housing programs are not to make housing affordable for you. In fact, they do the opposite. It's a public-private partnership where some a-hole like Weiss gets rich off the government. And it doesn't help you or me. I mean, because look at what the houses are priced down the street from you. And so, you know, there's more of this being contemplated. I believe it's now in the House on the road to housing, but it's probably not going to pass because of some stupid thing they put in the last minute, you know, on built-to-rent. Having developers would have to sell the properties after 7 years. It's probably not going to pass, which is why Trump did a couple of executive orders. But all that's in that road to housing is just more of these stupid programs where somebody else is going to get rich, not you. So anyway, that was I'm on my soapbox.
And you know, I'm reminded when you talk about these affordable housing programs, I'm reminded of my favorite meme. And I'm going to go ahead and flash it. I always forget who sent this to me originally, but whenever you hear about some creative or innovative way to make housing more affordable, what are you really looking at? You're looking at subprime lending. That's at the end of the day, that's what they're talking about. Loans to people who can't afford them. And the people getting rich, passing them back and forth, hoping they're not the one holding it when the music stops. It's really, you know, what this boils down to.
Should we talk about the other innovation that Fannie
Mae? Yes. Excellent segue. And I remember looking at this. This came out last week and just saying, no, that's not it. Here it is.
Okay.
And I saw this one and I thought, what the hell is going on? Fannie Mae accepts first crypto-backed mortgage product. And, you know, when I first saw this, I was like, okay, what the hell is a crypto-backed mortgage product? Because usually mortgages are backed by houses. I thought, let me just explain the loan real quick and then you can talk a little bit. The loans are second loans for a down payment for a house. So when you buy a house with a traditional mortgage, you make a down payment, 20% down if you're lucky, right? And then you borrow the rest and you make your payments. What they're doing here is for people who hold large amounts of crypto, you can get a second loan. That loan is collateralized by your cryptocurrency and they'll loan you the cash in order to make a down payment. And I guess the selling point is you won't have to sell your Bitcoin. You can just borrow against it. Okay. Sounds innovative. Why should I be worried about this, Melody? What could possibly go wrong?
So, you know, Jack, so I try to keep an open mind because believe it or not, you know, I used to be a real techno person, like real all down with all this because I wanted innovation in the mortgage industry because we had technology from 1968, 1972. And I really thought we could improve the customer experience, but then I realized nobody was really interested in that. And that's why I got out of fintech. And so I'm like, okay, maybe somebody came up with a good product here. And the first thing that I see is who is the organization that's going to be spearheading this product. And that's my heart. I mean, my blood started boiling. It's better.com. Well, who is better.com? And Coinbase, I should, you know, another really above board company. So this better.com is notorious in the industry. So this guy called his employees dumb dolphins. Then in 2022, he fired 900 people on a Zoom call. Now,
I remember that.
Yes. Yeah.
I remember that story. They held a Zoom call, 900 people, and they said, if you're on this meeting, it's because you're fired. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I remember this company hired every crisis management firm under the sun to try to explain why they're not just god-awful people. Right. But then the CEO doubles down. And like you said, what did he call them? Dumb dolphins?
Dumb dolphins.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know why we went aquatic with that, but okay. This guy, this isn't even the worst of it, right? Like firing 900 people out of the blue on a Zoom call is a pretty lousy thing to do, but this guy, Vishal Garg is his name.
Yes.
Let me show you. I'll bring up his, not his mug shot, but his mug there. this is Vishal Garg. Tell me a little bit about his history.
Yeah. So, you know, we were chatting before the show, like, and I think what you just said is really important about hiring all those crisis, you know, mitigators or whatever they're called to come in and tell them exactly what to do. And some people may say, well, okay, now some of the tech companies have been doing this, but back then this was completely unheard of. You wouldn't just fire 900 people on a Zoom call. But he's also in 2024, he was found in a civil trial guilty of breach of fiduciary duty for a different company that he started with a friend from Stuyvesant. He went to Stuyvesant High School, I think, in New York. And he was ordered to pay $5.5 million. Now, again, if the agencies were acting the way that I remember them acting, then he would be immediately put on a watch list. They would force them to take him out as CEO. I mean, you might be able to get out of this with some sort of remediation plan, but they would definitely want him not to be the leader anymore. Okay.
Can I pause you real quick? Because I really don't want to skip over the importance of that. When you're found in breach of fiduciary duty, all right, I guess industry terms, right? And we have a mix on this channel. We have some financial guys follow, and then we have a lot of, you know, a lot of just regular Main Street folks, not Wall Street folks. And we hear fiduciary duty thrown around. All right. when you manage other people's money, you have a duty, a fiduciary duty, to act in their best financial interest, not yours. All right. So when you are found in breach of fiduciary duty, in layman's terms, it means you're an a-hole and you can't be trusted. Okay. That is so important to understand, that this guy had to pay $5.5 million. And he was sued for over $100 million by his former business partner because his investors turned over money to him and he used his investors' money to pump his own investments and his own startups. Mm-hmm. That is huge.
It's huge.
And, you know, besides the whole firing 900 people thing, which is, you know, lack of tact.
Yeah.
You know, classless, sure.
Right.
But it doesn't mean you can't be trusted. It doesn't make you a crook. All right. When you act in breach of fiduciary rules, you should be persona non grata in managing anybody else's money for life, in my opinion. I mean, call me old fashioned. Reputation matters.
Right. It absolutely does. Because it just shows what you're going to. And this wasn't his only lawsuit. There was actually two other big ones. One got dismissed and looks to be kind of like they both were kind of ridiculous. But the other one was other investors suing him as well. And so, you know, he's got this checkered past. You know, we talked for the show that he's an ENY or Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year in 2020, very similar to Adam Neumann, who was in 2015. Everybody remember WeWork. And it's so funny, Jack, when I wrote the story, I mentioned WeWork, but I didn't realize they shared that because... Yeah.
And he calls himself a serial entrepreneur, too, which is also Adam Neumann's like tagline. Yeah. I am a serial entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
But yeah, quickly, let me just tell you about his reputation in the industry, though. This is why the fact that Fannie Mae is turned into these guys is just like mind blown. Because back when I was in fintech, literally everyone hated Better. Everyone. Because they had done a fairly good job of the borrower interface. Like, so if you were applying for a loan or whatever, like it was a fairly good process. And so everybody was so excited because they thought they were going to get the, you know, the originators thought they were going to get that cool interface too. On the back end of it, for the people that used it, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. I actually spent a lot of time doing solutions because of it, wraparound solutions. And they kept promising over and over and over again that they would deliver to the lenders, and they never did. And all he cared about, Guard cared about, was his IPO. And at this point, we should mention that since he IPO'd in 2023, they haven't made any money, but they did win the 2025, you know, Finance Innovation Year of the Year Award that was given by Inman, which is another industry publication. And let me tell you how those work. You send in, you know, a write-up with all kinds of life crisis. Or, yeah, exactly.
Oh, I got to put that back up there. Financial Innovator of the Year. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Right. And so you're reading this and you're like, what in the world? And so what tells me has happened, Jack, is there, I mean, Fannie and Freddie, as I knew them, don't exist anymore. It looks like we're doing pay for play without any we ain't concerned. It's all good, you know. Just and this guy, I mean, so, oh, we got to mention one other company real quick if we have time.
Please.
That he's involved in. Okay, so I remember probably in 23 watching some maybe Bigger Pockets or some real estate podcast where they started talking about how this company Notable was going gangbusters. And when I heard what it was, I was like, oh, for the love of all things holy. So what it is basically, if you want to sell your home, Notable will lend you money to spruce up your home. And then you only have to pay that money back when you get to the closing table. Now, I can think of about a million things wrong with this idea. And, you know, we don't know exactly who funded this. We know, though, that Garg has a large ownership stake in it, and he decided that, you know, Better.com should buy some of these products, service some of these, or hold the servicing rights for some of these products. That's way too confusing. Just ignore what I just said. But they should be in business with Notable, okay? It's the easiest way to say it for people to understand. But then we get to the 10K at Better, and, you know, the rooster came home to roost. I think in late 24, and they stopped engaging in that business because, and this is again why non-banks should not be giving out credit. They don't hold deposits. And they honestly, I don't think they know what they're doing. They don't understand credit and they don't understand credit risk. Some of the comments that I have heard from him over the years when talking about his servicing asset and things like that told me he knew nothing about the business, Jack, like zero, like less than zero. So it feels like he's just one of these drop in and plug and play, pay for play. But go ahead.
So this notable company, and it was this 10 capital firm that Vishal Garg runs, invested in Notable, and it turned out that Better.com, for whatever reason, or Better Home and Finance Corporation, the parent company of Better.com, was buying the loans issued by Notable. Mm-hmm. And I would, case in point, just want to reiterate, the guy was found liable for breach of fiduciary duty. He's the CEO of a publicly traded company, and his publicly traded company is buying the loans issued and serviced by his other company. Conflict of interest, maybe?
Maybe.
You know, he's using his other investors' money. Now he's in bed with Fannie and Freddie doing crypto mortgages.
Yeah. Now he's the one of all. And so here's the thing. This is how this usually works. You know, they pick somebody they really trust. They pick to spearhead these programs. You would want it to be a very, I mean, especially when you're talking about crypto, when we're all like, you know, crypto, right? You know, because of like Sam Bankman-Fried, those kinds of things, you know, you would pick a reputable actor. Like the fact that they picked this guy and this company is just, it's mind blowing to me. It's mind blowing to me. And it tells me that something is definitely rotten in the state of GSC land. I mean, really rotten. And so I think pretty much the entire economy has been, you know, extending and pretending since 2023 and doing a lot of narrative dances to avoid what's really happening. But I think fraud is bigger. And once we start to see delinquency increase, those QC reviews will increase because this is what happens. Fannie and Freddie will turn around and make you repurchase it. So they get it off their books. All the exposure goes off their books. And so, you know, I'm going to start going through all these 10Qs and because they should all have one of these repurchase clauses that we found in Walker and Dunlap, start to put together a picture. But I think the fraud's much worse. And as delinquency increases, is that private credit moves out of commercial real estate, we're going to see who's swimming naked for sure.
And it's important that you mention these GSEs because these are government-sponsored enterprises. They, for now, come with the implicit guarantee of the federal government. If these loans go bad, Uncle Sam picks up the tab. Yeah. As long as, you know, like, say, Fannie orders one of these companies to buy back the loans, well, if that company's insolvent, forget it. The government is going to be stuck with the bill. Mm-hmm. And as we prepare for Fannie and Freddie's IPO, which it looks like they're still preparing for that, we still don't have clarity on that guarantee. Are we going to privatize these companies, which means privatize the gains, while still maintaining the public exposure to the losses by leaving that implicit guarantee in place? And you mentioned Burry didn't touch on that in his article about it. And we still haven't gotten any clarity from the government about if they do IPO these companies and they do privatize the gains, will they leave that implicit guarantee in place? I can't imagine they won't.
Right.
Because what happened? Nobody's going to buy these loans. Nobody. Without that government backing.
Nobody, Jack.
So it's just more moral hazard, right? More taking other people's money without any responsibility for it.
Yeah. And I really don't think the banks want that, to be honest. And so I think, you know, we had that big article about the banks going down to Washington to talk about the IPO. I think they went down there and said, relax our capital requirements. and we will start doing mortgage lending again. And you will see in the last executive order by Trump that what they did was kind of relax requirements as well on community banks and smaller banks so that they can get back into lending again. And so, I think this IPO is I can't see it happening. And if it does, I think it's going to be a terrible, terrible failure. And to your point, so quickly, sorry, one quick more point is that exactly what Burry talked about, which he didn't address this in his article either, which I find strange. I don't think he did. You know, just about how the snake started eating itself in 2005 and 2006. Part of that was buying mortgage-backed securities and holding them, okay? Which is what, you know, of course, Trump said he told them to do. They'd already been doing it since May. There's a cap that Treasury sets. But now we're actually seeing, Jack, not a lot of those are being bought. But still, you know, why wouldn't Burry address this in detail that they're already eating themselves by increasing their MBS purchase holdings and mortgage-backed
even securities? As the Fed unwinds their MBS.
Right.
You just have Fannie buying them. So the net effect on the MBS market is being offset.
But it doesn't matter. I mean, they got a little bit of a tightening of the 10-year treasury to 30-year mortgage spread, but it's now blown back out again. And we've seen mortgage rates. So, and I argued at the time, this isn't going to make a dent. It's not going to matter. And it really didn't. And so now we're back where we were when he first announced it. Sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but it's crazy.
Well, Melody, I want to thank you for your attention on this story. And again, these are a lot of, I don't want to say small stories because they're not. These are huge stories, but they're not going reported, you know, especially that Walker and Dunlop story, along with the Century Capital story. Nobody's reporting on this stuff. Nobody's even watching this stuff. It's being done out in the open. It's not like they're really hiding it, but they kind of are, aren't they? And they fire all the people who investigate fraud, and then they say fraud investigations are down. Well, no shit. You fired all the people who do it.
Right. Right.
Maybe these two things are related. So thank you for doing that.
You got it.
Once again, folks, that is Melody Wright. She's the author of the M3 Melody Substack. I'm going to throw that up on the screen one more time. That was an excellent article that you put out recently.
Thank you.
And where is it? There it is. The Big Buy. And I'll put a link down below in the description so you guys can check that one out. Melody, I'll give you the final word. Anything you want to leave us with?
Well, I'll also say that I've been writing for Unicus Research as well on commercial real estate specifically. And that's where I did a bigger article even on Walker and Dunlap there. So if you guys want to check that out. But I just want to say, you know, this may be trite, but it's like what Wayne Gretzky said. You know, we want to skate to where the puck is going, not to what's already happened. And what I can tell you is that I don't think most people know what's already happened. And what's already happened is a lot of bezel and fraud. And so get ready. This is just the beginning. I mean, we think that the headlines have become like fast and furious. We're going to see a sustained period of these headlines in the foreseeable future.
All right. Thanks again, Melody. Everybody, I will see you on the next one.